Blog Talk Radio.
Another exciting one. This is we're just going into the second quarter of this year. These episodes have been big and exciting and fun. The chat room always gets loaded up in the first few minutes, and then so many people get on the line that it goes great, and you ground it well. You ground it real well. Like, I know more people are going to start populating the line, and the discussions are always very interesting, even towards the end of last week's one. Always interesting discussions. I'm really loving Black Free Thinkers this year, and just like last year.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. And, you know, that's what we're here to do. We are here to challenge you to think and live for yourself, not convert you. And, you know, what I find interesting is, you know, this week on Twitter, you know, went back and forth with some believers, and it's just the whole dialogue was interesting in just in general. And I find that as I grow as a free thinker, as a non-believer, that, you know, I'm growing further and further away from the religious ideology that I once held on to, but I also find myself being more compassionate and trying to understand better, but also becoming a stronger non-believer and a free thinker. It makes me also less tolerant of some things as well, so I'm trying to find a balance here, because sometimes it can get very difficult when you explain something to someone and you explain it as simply as it could possibly be explained. And sometimes they just don't get it, or they just don't want to get it. It's not that they don't get it. They don't want to get it. And you try your best to be as compassionate as possible. But anyway, moving on from that, you know, I wish them well. moving on from that. Hey, guys, if you all have not had a chance to, please take a moment and go out to the Hebrew site. SickieBooHutchison.com. Her new book is out, Godless Americana. And I'm posting the link on the Facebook page right now, but on Sunday, April 21st, she will be out at USC, basically signing autographed copies of the book. You'll be able to pick it up there if you're in a Los Angeles area. Otherwise, you can order it online. And it's actually a really, really good book. I've gotten through the first couple of chapters. I can't wait to get to chapter 4. Chapter 4 is Prayer Warriors and Freethinkers. So it's a it's 7 chapters. It's a good read. Make sure you all have dictionary.com up. There are a few really good 4- and 5-syllable words in there. But it's actually a really good book. Yeah, chapter 3, Straight the Hill, Christian Fascism in America, in Americana. And chapter 6, Seeing Things.
So, how do you pronounce her name, like for the simpletons like me out there?
Sikivu. The emphasis is on the second syllable. Sikivu.
Sikivu. Yeah, see, I've been reading her name since like 2011, and I never want to say it out loud because I know I'm going to get it wrong.
Oh, it doesn't. You know what? This is with me, you know, because I've been known to destroy some words. I was laughing with Raina the other day. Because I was talking about one particular issue, and I pronounced the word, and I said, well, this is the correct pronunciation of it. And I was like, but I bet you any amount of money that I'll start pronouncing it like this after a while. And she just laughed, because I know sometimes I'll kill some of these words. I know how to pronounce them correctly. It just sounds better the other way.
But yeah, right where I'm from, like, I always want to see if I could put the letter R in there somewhere. Can I call that kitchen tool a spatula? Can I call it that? Like, I want to say it my way. And, like, I know you're talking about the Twitter. Like, what you do with these shows, you make yourself public, and people are going to come to you. Like I got one of the wickedest spam emails just completely sexually harassing me on another level. Like, I realize apparently my milkshake brings all the boys to the yard. It's fantastic.
Oh, no. Oh, that's funny as hell. You're too funny, but yeah, you gotta love it. But, you know, all the time. But, guys, get out there and pick up Sikivu's book. It's actually a really, really good book, and you all definitely, you will enjoy it. We don't have very many authors of color in the community yet. You know, there are a bunch of books out there. You know, you have the book by Donald Wright, The Only Prayer I'll Pray Is Let My People Go. Right now I'm currently reading The Black Atheist in America by Jason Nguyen, and Sikivu, she has Moral Combat, and this one here, Godless Americana. And she has some wonderful books out there. And, you know, it's quite a few of us writing books. You have Don Barbera, The 80% Solution. And you have, I think he also wrote Black But Not Baptist. You know, I have that book as well. I started reading that. Excellent books. But, yeah, pick this one up. You know, maybe we'll get a chance to talk about it. Sikivu will be on the show later this month. So just kind of want to give you guys a heads up. We'll be talking about this book and a couple of other issues, so she'll be here. So there you go. I'm really excited about that. But, yeah, guys, get your read on. Get your read on. It's, you know, it just makes you more informed, and it's just wonderful because this is how you learn. You know, I learned from reading these books. I learned from going to the different conferences. We have Mario on the line with us now. And this is how you learn. We learn from one another, and that's another reason why I post all the links on my page. You know, I've actually had people complain and say, why do you post so many links? And I'm like, it's so that people can read. I want you to have a variety of, you know, different materials to read from. So it's just, it's important. And this is how we grow as individuals. And, you know, again, we want you to apply critical thinking to every area of your life, not only when it comes to religion, but everything, including, you know, your work ethics, all of that. So, you know, yeah, again, you know, we have to kind of move beyond that. But, you know, today's topic, William, tell everybody how they can call in.
You can get into this phone line. Well, now, first, you're sitting at your PC, you're sitting at your laptop. turn that volume down. If you haven't
Thank
heard
you.
The news on, all right, yeah, turn that volume down. That is the good news that I'm delivering to you. You do not have to pay 10% of your money. You don't have to come and sit in here every Sunday, but turn that volume down. Pick up that phone, dial 310-982-4273 to get through. And Blog Talk Radio changed the format, so now if you press 1, a little hand doesn't go up, so you just call in, and we hope you want to get in on the conversation and say something, because Blog Talk Radio got creative.
You know, they've gotten creative in a couple of different ways, but it's okay. You know, if you all, especially if you're in a chat room, just tell me that you're on the line, and I'll pick up, and we can go from there. But today's topic, religion and black male privilege. Again, today's topic is religion and black male privilege. But before we go into that, Tuesday, the barbershop will be having a show. And the topic of that is unauthorized authority, William and Dragnut, or Father Teresa and Dragnut. It should be interesting. They're going to talk about a variety of things. You want to give them a brief synopsis, William?
Yeah. I'm fairly disappointed with my species. And the fact that we just take on authority, and then since that story, that's not a new story, but it's been making its rounds online over the past, I'd say, like 45 to 60 days about the monkeys that get sprayed with the water hose because one of them tried to climb up and get a banana, and then they beat that one down, you know, whenever a new monkey comes in to try to climb up and get the banana, and it gets to a point where there's none of the original monkeys are in there, but whenever one tries to climb up and get that banana, stop making fun of me in the chat room, trying to climb up there and get that banana, and they still beat them down, but they don't know why because they've never been hit with that water hose. And that bothers me with my species. So we're going to be talking about authority that is unauthorized, and we don't even know why it's authority and where I think my species can go. Even though I doubt that it's probable in my lifetime, I'd at least like to put these thoughts out in the free market of ideas, and maybe some 12-year-old that's still healthy and has a good liver and a strong back and no arthritis can start putting this stuff in motion, because I am aging out of the game of actually being able to do something.
Well, there you go, folks. In a nutshell, that's what's going to be happening Tuesday evening, 7:00 Central Standard, 8:00 Eastern, 5:00 Pacific. So if you get a chance to tune in, it's going to be a great show. I'm looking forward to it. Next Sunday, we are going to be talking about religion, masculinity, and homophobia. Again, religion, masculinity, and homophobia. And we may have a show Friday. I will definitely let you guys know about that as soon as possible. So, you know, it should be interesting, but, you know, I'd like to say hi to everybody in the chat room. I see you guys there. Welcome to the show, and, you know, William here telling us about bananas. And so you so, you know, I'm looking forward to today's show. It should be interesting. But, you know, we want to talk about religion and black male privilege. Now, I want everybody to understand that this is not about beating up on black men or anything like that. And, you know, as someone pointed out on my wall the other day, that, you know, black men, they have it hard. And, you know, I don't deny that. I don't deny that, and, you know, I'm definitely not here to beat up on anybody per se. However, there are some privileges to just being a male. And in particular, when we start talking about the religious community, there are definitely some privileges being a male in a religious community. You know, if you've ever paid attention, you will notice that the majority of the people in leadership are male. They're not female, and the few females that are there, you know, they pretty much kind of had to claw their way up in most regards, unless they're the pastor's wives. I refuse to call them first ladies. First ladies of what? Usually the second or third wife, but that's another story. But, but you know, the interesting, you know, it's interesting. And for the person in the chat room that says topic of this discussion has already pissed them off. Oh, well. Anyway, you know, there's always going to be somebody pissed off about, you know, something. And, you know, I see a lot of projection, a lot of projection. And, again, guys, you know, if it doesn't apply to you, move on. If it doesn't apply to you, move on. So, anyway, we have Dr., you know, I'm going to give you some information from a few people, but I'm going to define black male privilege. And this is the definition, the working definition from Dr. R. LaRue Lewis, who's the assistant professor of sociology and black studies at the City College of New York. And he says, black male privilege is defined as a system of built-in and often overlooked systematic advantages that center the experiences and concerns of black men while minimizing the power that black males hold. And basically, it's been said that this is important because, one, we must think of the invisible sets of privilege as accumulating and impacting our lives. Two, the black male privilege makes experiences and issues of black men central and paramount in our discussion of community change. And three, in emphasizing the crisis of the black male, it continues to disempower black men and block healthy engagement in the social problems that we face, both domestic and absent in rearing children. Now, again, this does not, you know, apply to all black men. You know, again, I definitely don't want to be making blanket statements or broad invectives. So, you know, we're just talking about some of the social issues that we see happening in our community. And this is one that I definitely want to talk about and engage. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to talk a little bit about the Black Male Privilege Checklist written by Jewel Woods. And it's going to, you know, give some examples. You know, as to what that particular is, and had someone in the chat room says, how many years have you been a black male? How many years have you been a black woman? I mean, seriously. I mean, that could work either way. You know, so that's how that goes. But let's see here. The Black Male Privilege Checklist by Jewel Woods. And I'm just going to give you guys a few of them because there's, you know, they have close to 100, you know, different things you can check off. But the first one is, and this is from the Black Male Privilege Checklist, in leadership and politics, it has, I don't have to choose my race over my sex in political matters. When I read African American history textbooks, I will learn mainly about men. When I learn about the civil rights movement and black power movements, most of the leaders that I will learn about will be black men. I can rely on the fact that in the near 100-year history of national civil rights organizations, such as NAACP and Urban League, virtually all of the executive directors have been male. I will be taken more seriously as a political leader than black women. And there are several more here. Let's go down to the section where it talks about beauty. It says, I have the ability to define black women's beauty by European standards in terms of skin tone, hair, and body size. In comparison, black women rarely define me by European standards of beauty in terms of skin tone, hair, or body size. I don't have to worry about the daily hassles of having my hair conforming to any standard image of beauty the way black women do. And, you know, again, I do not have to worry about the daily hassles of being terrorized by fear of gaining weight. In fact, in many instances, bigger is better for my sex. And this one here, my looks will not be central standard by which my worth is valued by members of the opposite sex. In the sex and sexuality section here, it talks about I can purchase pornography that typically shows men defile women by the common practice of the money shot. I believe that causing pain during sex is connected with a woman's pleasure without ever asking her. And it's so many more, you know, again, wow. It says I have easy access to pornography that involves virtually any category of sex where men degrade women, often young women. And another category here is pop culture, popular culture. And right here it says, I come from a tradition of humor that is based largely on insulting and disrespecting women, especially mothers. I have the privilege of not having black women dress up and play funny characters, often overweight, that are supposed to look like me for the entire nation to laugh. When I go to the movies, I know that most of the leads in black films are men. I also know that all of the action heroes in black film are men. And just going on, and here's attitudes and ideology. I have the privilege to define black women as having an attitude without referencing the range of attitudes that black women have. I have the privilege of believing that a woman cannot raise a son to be a man. I have the privilege of believing that a woman must submit to her man. I have the privilege of believing that feminism is anti-black. I have the privilege of believing that black women are different sexually than other women and judging them negatively based on this belief. In the sports category, it says, I will make significantly more money as a professional athlete than members of the opposite sex will. In school, girls are cheerleaders for male athletes, but there is no such role for males to cheerlead for women athletes. Let's see here. I am essentially able to do anything inside or outside without my shirt on, whereas women are always required to cover up. And talking globally or within the diaspora, says, I have the privilege of being a part of a sex where the mutilation and disfigurement of a girl's genitalia is used to deny her sexual sensations or protect her virginity for males. You know, in college, I will have the opportunity to date outside the race at a much higher rate than black women will. I have the privilege of having the phrase, sowing my wild oats, applied to my sex as if it were natural. Going down to communication and language, it says, what is defined as news in black America is defined by men. I can dismissively refer to another person's grievances as blanking, and you all know what that word is. I have the privilege of not knowing what words and concepts like patriarchy, phallocentric, complicity, colluding, mean. So, you know, again, you know, for relationships, you know, in this category it says, I have the privilege of not having to assume most of the household or child care responsibilities. Isn't that why Coolio's girlfriend left him? I have the privilege of marrying outside of the race at a much higher rate than black women marry. And my strength as a man is never connected with the failure of the black family, whereas the strength of a black woman is routinely associated with the failure of the black family. For church and religious traditions, in the black church, the majority of the pastoral leadership is male. In the black church tradition, most of the other theology has a male point of view. For example, most will assume that the man is the head of the household. And for physical safety, which is the last category here, it says, I do not have to worry about being considered a traitor to my race if I call the police on a member of the opposite race, I mean, of the opposite sex. I have the privilege of knowing men who are physically or sexually abusive to women, and yet I still call them friends. I can videotape women in public, often without their consent, with male complicity. And it just goes on. Here's another one. I can touch and physically grope women's bodies in public, often without their consent, with male complicity. All right, so it's 94. I didn't read 94 of them to you, but I read, you know, I read quite a few, you know, this whole thing is interesting. But, you know, just looking at this, You know, I'm just sitting back and looking at the chat room and looking at some of the, you know, dialogue in there. You know, this one person, you're projecting, guy. You're projecting. Move on. And so, again, you know, we need to talk about these things. And, you know, regarding religion, you know, trying to put it in that, frame it within that particular context, you know, you're taught a lot of these things at church, not all of it, but quite a few. You know, again, we talked about how in the leadership capacity at church is mainly male.
Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry. I'm just looking at this this person in the chat room talking about that black men don't have any sort of privilege. And it's not this conversation is not to say that black men have privilege, you know, on par with white male heterosexual Christians. We're saying that even though you are not in that category, which, you know, by all measurements, you know,
right,
mean that you're privileged in every sense of the word. But when you're black, when you're a black male, you still get male privilege associated with
exactly
with the general patriarchy that's, you know, in our society.
It's not a comparison of black male privilege versus white male privilege. Those are two distinct different types of privileges to a degree, even though there are some similarities and some commonalities there. What we're talking about today is a black male privilege in relation to black women.
Let me say something, man. You know, the show is delivered free of charge. Somebody else does all the research to find out all this information and deliver you the information. You have the choice to listen to it or not. If you don't like it, you don't have to listen to it. Sitting in the chat room insulting the host or insulting the topic of the show, it tells me you're wasting your time. If you don't want to listen to the show, you don't have to. As far as the male, I know that there's male privilege. I talk about male dominance all the time when I get into a discussion, especially with theists, you know, and I even ask somebody, since you believe in God so much, name one female angel. Name something in the Bible in which a female does something that was worth that didn't require her to.
There's a handful of women in the Bible. There's a handful of women in the Bible, to be fair. But you know, a handful. I'm just saying, let's be fair, because we're gonna get somebody who's gonna come out the woodwork and gonna be like but there's Ruth and there's
Deborah
and there's
exactly.
Esther and there's, you know what I mean? So let's be fair. You know
We have Nakomi as well as Alfred on the line with us, you know, right now. And, yeah, you know, there are some great women in the Bible, you know, that they've portrayed, you know. But, you know, we're talking about today, you know, in particular in the role that a lot of black men play in the family and the male privilege that is bestowed upon them because of religion. You know, I'll give an example. I've known women that were being physically and or sexually abused within their marriage, and their male pastor told them to stay with that husband. And we've
heard
stories of women being killed and maimed. And, you know, the unfortunate part is with the domestic services that we have available to assist people that are victims of domestic abuse, there are very few of them, and it's becoming fewer and fewer as, you know, the money is being cut and it's drying up. And then, you know, again, you know, why should she stay in an abusive relationship?
Right.
Well,
and
you know, and I'm going to tell you something.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to add something onto what Kim was saying, though. Kim, what I was going to say was that, you know, and there's been stories, you know, out of Detroit and other places talking about the sheer number of, you know, rape kits that haven't been, you know, processed. And when we talk about things like, you know, rape statistics and the number of women whose rapes go unreported and, you know, the number of rapes that are reported that don't actually end up, you know, in a conviction, all of this stuff plays into it. And unfortunately, it adds to this mindset that so many people have gotten that a lot of rape reporting is somehow false, that a woman's word when she says that she's been raped cannot be trusted, although whether you've been raped or not, if you make a rape accusation, you are subject to vile, you know, accusations and, you know, character attacks. I mean, society blames the victim in rape and domestic violence and, you know, all of these other cases before it blames the you know, the defendant before it blames the person who perpetrated the violence in the first place. So,
right.
You know, this all goes in with male privilege. You know, I mean, look at Steubenville. You know what I mean? Look at the father of Malik, one of the defendants, right? The father is sitting in there. His son just apologized for what he did, and the father is still sitting up there saying that he's innocent. You know what
you
I mean?
What was tripping me out, though, over the last week, I saw that trial of those teenagers who were convicted of raping that girl in the car and everything. And this happens with it. Every time I see jocks accused of raping a girl, it's automatically something wrong with that girl. They try to look at her history and what she's been doing and how she acted and everything like that. They don't even, you know, they're looking at it. She is ruining these young guys' lives. Not that they're ruining their own lives by raping or doing whatever they did and everything like that. 9 times out of 10, this stuff doesn't even get reported very much anyway, because the girl is going to get vilified, you know, for it. And then, like, I remember the Mike Tyson issue, in which I heard a lot of people saying, I was still kind of young at this time, but I heard a lot of people saying that she's lying, because why would you be in somebody's room at 3 o'clock in the morning? As if the clock defines when rape is and when it isn't. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't there. I don't know if he did it or didn't, but he got convicted of it. So, I mean, that's good enough.
Right, exactly. And, you know, again, when I read off that checklist, and basically it was talking about how, you know, if a woman calls the police, a black woman calls the police on her black man, how she's, viewed as a traitor. You know, it's turning her back, and, you know, she's demonized and vilified. I've seen this. I've even seen this within my own family. You know, had an incident in my family in which the woman who was a relative was, you know, in the process of separating from her husband. And he got angry, and he went over where she was staying. And basically he kidnapped her and raped her and was about to kill her. And changed his mind and brought her back. And then, you know, when he was arrested, because, of course, we were all over the place looking, trying to find him. When he was arrested, his family was saying that, you know, we were traitors for calling the police. And, you know, having him arrested, he did time for that. You know, but, you know, why is it that we're traitors if we use the system? You know, to rectify these situations. That's what I'm trying to understand.
Right. Why is it that when we have a scenario where a young girl is raped or sexually assaulted, that in the black community, and if she's a black girl especially, in the black community, why are we predisposed to calling her fast and calling her character into question, and not the grown man that slept with her or raped her or sexually assaulted her? You know what I mean? Why are we not questioning his character and questioning the character of a child? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
This happens quite a lot in our community.
Exactly.
Now,
exactly. Go ahead, honey.
I wonder now, you know, I'm probably going to ask this in a jacked up way, but anyway, does male privilege also kind of affect or influence the women who enable it, you know what I'm saying, to continue or reinforce it? Like, a lot of people, like, concerning the case with the team, there are a lot of moms in that who are siding with the male jocks, because, you know,
of course,
they're not being messed
course.
Up near it. And I'm looking at that video, and with the bus driver, you know, this guy's probably a 225-pound man gets up and delivers one of the biggest haymakers to a woman half his size. And I'm seeing so many people cheer him on and so many women saying that she deserved it. I'm like, how ingrained is this male dominance, especially in the black community, that it's really okay for a man twice this woman's size to deliver a full-force closed-fist punch to this woman's face?
Very, very ingrained. It's beneficial in most cases, for women to actually, demonstrate that sort of support for the dominance, for the system, because
right.
they benefit from it, because they benefit from being associated with a strong man, and that association with a strong man legitimizes her femininity in the eyes of other people. Do you see
exactly.
what I'm saying?
Exactly. And in order for us, you know, the black community to move forward, we can't move forward when only half the race or half the community is liberated.
Okay.
You know, and
that's true.
You know, and the thing about black male privilege is, you know, again, I read off some of those points, but when all of the attention is centered on the oppression of black males, that excludes black females and our oppression and what we have to deal with. And even when black males are the oppressors, again, when we rail against it, is minimized, you know. And so just because you're being oppressed, that does not mean that you cannot be an oppressor.
Right.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Can y'all hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, I was waiting for a chance to interject. I think I forgot who it was here that was getting upset. I think it was Rob the Nerd. Here's the thing. I understand where you're coming from. You don't want any further stigmatization and ostracization of black men. I understand that. This is specifically referring to the relation to black men to black women. This is not black men to white men. This is not black men to native men. This is speaking specifically about the correlation between our sexual counterparts for our race. That, I mean, the title is not a misnomer. It just does not include in relation to black females. Now, I know that personally, I have witnessed this throughout my life. I didn't know what it was called. I didn't know what to consider it, but I knew it was wrong. And I think I typed an example in the chat where my cousins and I could stay out well past when the lights went out, when we were older. Our female cousins could not. They had to stay in and play Barbie dolls and Hello Kitty Island Adventure or whatever, because there were guys out there, our male friends with penises, that had semen in them, and they were fertile females. That was honestly the logic behind that. And I knew that this was wrong, and they knew it was wrong. But that is how it progressed. And that's not just specifically for our race. That is, I guess, another European standard that we have, again, migrated over here and held that to be the standard for our patriarchy here. And I know you probably witnessed something like that, too. One of my cousins could not go outside if there were men working outside, doing roofing, doing any kind of yard work, because her mother felt that if there were men outside working, that they would be sexually turned on by her six-year-old daughter for whatever reason. But she was then denied a lot of outside time, and consequently, she is now obese. You know, I'm pretty sure that played a big role in that, because she hardly ever was outside. She was always inside, eating, cooking with her mom, sitting down watching TV, because she wanted
exactly.
to keep her away from that perceived danger from all, you know, her imaginary male counterparts. But I digress. It really comes down to trying to view this as objectively as possible. I know that I am privileged as a black male, especially in a religious scenario, because I will
exactly.
hold more power than
right.
any male in any congregation that I choose. That's easily
right.
demonstrated, easily. And I can actually give you another example when I think they made a King of the Hill episode about when they got a female pastor, and how everybody kind of bucked and tumbled because they were so used to having a male one that they didn't consider her to be, you know, a legitimate member that could
right.
hold any authority over them. And it's in the Bible that a woman should not should be silent and should not teach any man. It's in there. So just from a religious standpoint, this concept is supported. So
exactly.
it's not
right.
like a,
right.
it's not about further stigmatization of black males. It is not. It is showing that even when you are in a scenario where it's less than ideal, you are still the top dog in some aspect.
Exactly. And that's why I explained at the beginning that you know, white male privilege and black male privilege are two separate things, even though there's a commonality. And the perspective that we're coming from today is black male in relation to a black woman. And in the, especially within the religious community, especially within that particular context. And again, you know, I've witnessed this firsthand. I've been, you know, victim of certain things firsthand. And, you know, it's interesting, but yeah, you know, especially in abusive situations, I've seen women, you know, that have been told to stay. I've seen women who've had to pack up the whole family and the children because the man spent all the money on whatever it was he was doing, but didn't bother to pay the bills. And there are some women that have done the same thing, you know, but I'm just talking about in relation to certain situations in which the man was the head of the household, but yet the whole household suffered, but it was the woman that was blamed for it.
Right. Well, I was going to say...
Go ahead.
I was going to say that, you know, we've talked about it on the show repeatedly, you know, again, if you guys haven't read it, read Mortal Kombat, read some black feminist, you know, literature, and you'll get an idea of what we're talking about. But there's, you know, we've talked about sort of the history of sort of, you know, how black people have been, you know, maligned and stereotyped in the past, you know, how we've been said to be hypersexual and, you know, savage and, you know, violence and all of these sorts of stereotypes. And in our history, women in particular were saddled with the need to sort of reject those stereotypes in their behavior. And so women were had higher expectations on their behavior, on their chastity, on their, you know, on their presentation than men have. And so a lot of this is also tied into religious belief. And this is just sort of the stuff that we're talking about, just for background. It's not, you know, and don't get me wrong, because I'm the last person to say that all patriarchy comes from religion, but a lot of it does. You know what I mean? And
exactly.
But, you know, patriarchy would be what it is even without religion, I think. But a lot of it's reinforced by religion.
Yeah.
And so you have to think about these things in their historical context. We were black people who've been said to be all of these terrible things, and through our association with the church and trying to resist those labels, we've tried to be more conservative than even mainstream in a lot of respects. And that's where a lot of this stuff comes from, you know, calling girls, you know, fast, you know what I mean, to scare them back into being docile, to be you know what I mean, to get them in line, so to speak. You know?
Exactly. You keep them in line so that they can continue to control and manipulate them, but, you know, silence them. And it happens across the board. Now, again, we're talking, you know, we can take this conversation in so many different directions, but again, the context is within the parameters of, you know, a religious type of environment. You know, and what I find interesting is someone made the suggestion that we do a show about black women being exploited by the church, which was an excellent suggestion, so that show will be coming up soon. But, you know, again, you know, kind of pulling this back to center a little bit, is why is it that women's issues are put on a back burner to support, you know, some of the black men in particular in the religious community? And then once we've achieved whatever particular goal, then women are still continue to be marginalized and disrespected. You know, it's okay to collect their money every Sunday, but you don't want them in leadership. How does that work?
Oh, and I just wanted to say one more thing, because I saw somebody in the chat room say that that women get better, more preference in terms of, you know, domestic issues and divorce and custody and what have you. There's actually been some studies that have come about where they actually showed that there wasn't a preference in terms of giving the mother's custody of their kids, but what happens is that states don't honor a presumption that children should always be with their mothers. But the fact of the matter is that they look at who the custodial parent has been, who the parent who gives the most care is, and it usually is the parent who is in the best interest of the child. So if you, in fact, as a male, want your kids, you just have to demonstrate that. And a lot of men have gotten their children. But, you just have to be reasonable about it. If you want, I'll try to post that on the Black Freethinkers wall, rather.
Thank you. I appreciate
you know,
it. Go ahead, Mario.
Yeah, there's some funny commentary in the chat room. It's almost like we said there's no such thing as racism and there's somebody, whatever. Anyway, so I'm talking about, one of the things that I noticed is that a lot of the things we use to insult men, especially, I know this is not just a Black man problem, but, it's one of these problems is specifically that I've seen with Black men is that we refer to men in the feminine to insult them, in the P word, you acting like a bitch, stuff like that. And I've even heard some dudes say, pull your skirt up and stuff like that. And then I see these memes and these laws and these people talking about the effemination of the Black man, how these movies that you don't have to watch, directed by directors who suck anyway, and movies that you don't even have to see are somehow contributing to the effemination of the Black man, as if there's something wrong with being effeminate. You know what I'm saying? What you're saying is that, if I'm compared to a woman, that's a pretty bad thing.
Right.
I'm above women. I'm above women. That's a step backwards for me. You know what I'm saying? So, it trips me out that, so many men do not realize how much privilege there is being a male, and especially when you're in a minority. There are minorities within minorities.
Exactly.
If you look at the gay community, you have, the LGBTQIA community, but you also have some who do not like bisexuals, some who do not like studs, some who do not like tops, some who do not like bottoms. And you have all these dichotomies and these factions form, and you have minorities within minorities. You know what I'm saying? So just because you haven't been a direct recipient or experienced this doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Kind of like gravity, you don't have to believe in it to fall and bust your ass.
Exactly. And, what I find interesting, again, some of the chatter in the chat room, go read Uncle Tom first. You're just showing your ignorance, and you're actually starting to get on my nerves. And guess what? You're gone. And, the whole thing, to me, just looking at all of this, some of these people, I truly believe, some of the ones in the chat room, you probably do better going back to religion. That's how, I'm looking at this here, some of the, comments that are made. So, yeah, you're out. Anyway, and there's nothing wrong with having differing opinions, but, again, with that particular person, I believe it's more about projection. It's a little bit more to this than what meets the eye. So, again, we need to be able to have this conversation without it turning into an all-out battle. If you can't express yourself without insulting everyone, without taking it personal, conversation got turned around. And in some cases in which now they're saying that the Black men that were involved with the Black women, it was only a Black male and a non-Black male that was convicted, even though they're going to go after more people. But how is it that the men became vilified? And this happens also in our community, because I've seen situations in which a young woman or older woman was violated sexually or physically. And basically, she became the target. She was re-victimized. Exactly. And so, the whole thing, is interesting how all of that comes about. But, what do we do? How do we go about trying to fix this? I believe education is part of it. And when we present information, I guess the question is, why is it rejected?
Yeah, like why they don't want to make consent part of sexual education. Like, I think maybe we should.
To one another. That should be across the board. So, you know, again, you know, why is it that with this type of, you know, conversation in this type of situation, you know, I've seen a lot of men get angry. And I don't understand why the anger. This is something that I would think that most men would be happy about in the in relation to the fact that we're just trying to balance things out and level the playing field. You know, this. You know, no one is bashing men. But why do they get that way?
Hey, Kim, I'm about to share a clip, article that someone posted, and I forgot to. I admit to post it earlier this week. But it was like, the title is Rape Okay? And it said, during a poll of high school students, Jacqueline Goodchild asked the following question: is it all right if a male holds a female down and physically forces her to have sex?
The way that we, our gender role expectations, I mean, you know, even though men and women in most households are both working, women do a lot more of the household chores, and they're spending a lot more time with the children, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Even in homes where there are men, you know, not working right now, they've asked these men what type of time they're devoting to helping raise the children or helping with household chores. These men have wanted to help out more. He might be viewed as being less of a man. You know, and so this is a problem that we're trying to highlight, that, you know, patriarchy and misogyny don't just affect women. They affect men, and they affect relationships that men can have with their children. I mean, you know, a lot of fathers are not involved in their kids' lives besides being there. You know what I mean? They're just there. You know, but is there a difference between being there and being involved? And some men are actually finding that there is a difference. You know?
Exactly. And, you know, it starts with talking with one another and putting this information out here and communicating and, you know, coming to an understanding and then working together to work towards a solution. Again, you know, I'll hear, you know, men, and I've had these conversations, and they'll say, well, where's your solution? Well, where is yours? Maybe we should get together and talk about these things and be able to, you know, come together, put a solution together, move forward. You know, it's like everybody is trying to project the responsibility on the other person when the responsibility belongs to all of us.
I was going to say the first thing, before you can solve a problem, you got to tell people that there's a problem. You know what
exactly.
I mean? People have to know that there's a problem before you can do anything to solve it. And what really has to happen is we have to get to a point where we can discuss these issues in the open without people like the person who got kicked out of the chat room earlier, you know, degrading the conversation and acting as though it has no no relevance, when in fact it does, and we need people to stop denying these things so that we can get to the heart of them, you know. And we have to, and by being aware of these things, we can stop ourselves from, you know, perpetuating it, you know. If you as a woman, you know, come across a man who doesn't necessarily meet all of the, you know, checklist, you know, items for being a man, you know what I mean?
Right.
Then you don't. Then you can, you know, stop yourself before you call him the B word or a sissy or somehow treat him as though he's less of a man or less of a human being just because he doesn't do things that society would expect him to do. You know,
exactly.
Likewise, if you're a man, you meet a woman and she doesn't do all of the things that, you know, she should be doing according to her gender role, you know, you can, you know, respect her and still accept her for who she is, you know?
Exactly. Well, we have a caller from 360. 360, may we ask who's calling?
The big funny Travis Simmons is calling.
Hey, Travis,
oh,
how are you?
How y'all doing? Talking about man's privilege, huh?
Yes, yes, yes.
Well, you know, one of my favorite people in the world, Ingersoll, said that the parasite of the woman is the priest. How about that?
Wow.
And the preacher.
Yeah.
The parasite of the woman. Mm-hmm.
And well, because, you know, they feed off of her skill, her talents, her money, her vulnerability, you know, they're able to manipulate, control her. And this is not all women. So please understand, I'm not making blanket statements here. But, you know, again, yes, and until women stand up and decide, and again, you know, there have been situations in which, you know, there are feminists in the church. And, you know, the interesting thing is Raina and I participated by being spectators in one particular black religious feminist podcast. And basically, you know, there are quite a few, and this isn't the first time, this isn't, okay, I don't know who that is, but I got to put you on hold here. Yeah. All right. So basically, this is not the first time that, you know, black women have tried to speak up within the, you know, religious community, but a lot of that was squashed. And then, you know, part of that was after, yeah, I can't take it. Hold on. To figure out who that is. You know, part
what's
of that,
the noise?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm trying to figure out who it is. Part of it, you know, has to do with, you know, they've spoken up in the past, and while speaking up, basically they were squashed and they were told that, you know, that was not, you know, God's plan, if you will, for them to, you know, be feminist, that men are the head of the household. Again, you know, they use the Bible as a weapon. They use the Bible as a weapon to basically subjugate the women. And, you know, they're starting to speak up more and more. And I think this is one of the reasons why we're starting to see more people move away from religion and move away from the church. Now, they haven't necessarily moved away from God, okay, if you will. But again, you know, we're starting to see changes. Again, we're starting to see, you know, the evolving of the mind, if you will. However, this is not the first time this has happened. And,
right,
you know, where we are now as far as, like, the feminist movement or civil rights movement or any of these movements by groups that have been marginalized, we've been here before and further. And what happens is we get to a sense of complacency. And then people forget, or they think that this is how it's supposed to be. And in many cases, you know, we have not taught the younger generations. And what happens is you get some of these other groups, they creep in, and then they set us back 20, 30 years. And
right,
what we have to do is make this a continuous, you know, issue that needs to be on the forefront. And, you know, again, you know, when we make changes, you know, especially within minority communities, it's a benefit to all. The feminist movement, you know, feminist ideas and ideology, it benefits men as well. So, you know, some of the black men that have, you know, issues with, you know, black women wanting to have equal rights, I'm not understanding why, because it benefits you the most, actually.
Yeah, they don't see it that way. Because if women have equal rights to them, they might actually have to do something, you know, something else, you know, something more than what they've been required to do up till now, you know? Like,
exactly.
Respect them.
Exactly.
To begin with.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Go ahead, hon.
I wanted to interject for a second. I had to get my son put up in his high chair. I just wanted to address the issue. Cloud Nation wanted to offer a solution to the problem, because you feel that that would be a proper way to address the situation. And, of course, I agree, but we still have an hour left in the show, and we have people continuously denying that there is a problem in the first place. How can you possibly want a solution? The show still has an hour to go, but offer a solution when you yourself and others are still denying that even a problem exists. So we're getting a bit ahead of ourselves. The first step to a solution is to identify the problem. You can't offer any solution to any situation if there is no problem. So that is the first step. The next step is once somebody even agrees that there is a problem, you have to be fully educated on it and recognize it. I know you're advocating solutions, but you're not acknowledging the fact that this takes a process. This takes a long time. This is something that's been ingrained in people for generations. It's not going to have any simple solution that is going to, you know, just change the world overnight. And I'm not angry. I'm very passionate when I speak. If you see any of my videos, I'm very passionate when I do speak. That is a big problem in our society, is that we immediately start to detest certain things, especially if we're projecting some cases.
Exactly.
Or if it doesn't directly impact us. So you cannot expect the same standard for something that you don't feel equally passionate for unless you are impacted by it. And from what I can tell here is that your standard, which is acceptable, will not be applied in this case. This is something that has not changed in my generation, my sons, or probably the next one. This is something we have to take it step by step. Just like many other issues in our society, because it is unique in and of itself, but there are many other issues that are far, far, far magnitude of far greater. I mean, I could just name the AIDS crisis in Africa. People have telling these protections, and killing them. That's going to take probably longer to address. So it's a step-by-step process, to say the least. It's not anything that you're going to present and then just poof, magic is going to go away, and here's the fountain of youth. This here is your magic potion to solve all and be all. So from my personal perspective, this right here is the beginning. Progressive society that you really want to get to eventually.
All right, you're kind of fading out there a little bit Alfred. So, but no, I caught what you were saying, and you know, you're absolutely correct. I mean, part of the issue is, you know, in order to be able to address these issues, you know, when we start having these discussions, you have people coming in trying to say that this is not an issue. So, and you know, whether we're talking about, you know, black male privilege, or we're talking about sexism, or we're talking about racism, I mean, there's a myriad of different issues that we've tried to tackle and that other people have tried to tackle. And, you know, it turns into, well, this doesn't exist. Well, maybe, you know, black male privilege doesn't exist to you because you're seeing it from the eyes of a black male who happens to be privileged.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So
that's part of the privilege, is not having to see that you're privileged, or to understand.
It's the same thing when black folks are talking to white persons and they're talking about getting rid of affirmative action. I'm like, well, if you think it should be gotten rid of, then you don't. Then you have to also be able to tell me, what do you think it was trying to help? And if it's black folks got it so good right now, then show me where the line of black folks' pockets are full and things are all good. You know what I mean? And basically, either help or get out the way. Help or get out the way.
Exactly. Or get pushed out the way, one or the other. You know, that's what's happening. And, you know, in regarding to, you know, and I've said this about the talk about racism is, the reason why many, you know, people of non-color do not necessarily want to address the racism is because it will force them to look over their history. And I see the same thing within the context of this conversation. You know, there are quite a few black men that do not want to address the issue of black male privilege because it's going to force them to look at the history of our community. And while, you know, again, let's put things in its proper perspective, black men have not had it easy. You know, there's definitely, you know, imbalance on college campuses and enrollment, an imbalance in education, you know, from the secondary, you know, primary levels, you know, as well. High unemployment rate, the high incarceration rates. I acknowledge all of that. you know, black people in general do not have it easy, you know, but, you know, black men, you know, and again, look at what's happening with the stop and frisk and all of these other particular issues. Trust me, I am not disregarding any of that. But, you know, we're talking within the context of the black community, within the context of a black relationship, male-female relationship, or even in some cases male-male. I have a friend that's transgender. And, you know, they prefer to be, you know, acknowledged as he, which is fine. However, you know, in having conversations with him, basically he says even though some of the guys, you know, accept him as him, there are some that do not, and they are very disrespectful. And, you know, he's even had some guys try to come on to him. And, you know, so again, it goes beyond, you know, just so many different levels, so many different ways that this can be tackled. But again, you know, given that black male privilege, you know, it has to be addressed, has to be acknowledged, and we can work together to try to find a solution to this. However, part of the solution will be opening up opportunities and acknowledging women as equals. And that tends to be the problem for some men, especially coming from that patriarchal mindset, and those rooted in the church. So, you know, how do we go beyond that?
Right.
You know, one of the things somebody said to me one time is, I think it was a Voltaire quote or whatever, but
mm-hmm.
It's like, if you want to know who's the privileged one and who is the one that is not privileged, then look at who is making the jokes.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? And at the time, I didn't fully understand it. But then when I look at stuff like, you know, a lot of the quote-unquote black humor, most of it sucks, especially you watch, you know, the comedy shows and stuff like that, you know, you see the black dude is imitating a stereotypical black woman. And 9 times 10, the neck roll, the snap and stuff like that. If they're going to imitate a gay guy, it's a super feminine gay guy. You know what I'm saying? That right there, I mean, to me, that doesn't show you male privilege, that you can pick on these two types of people within this minority. And, you know, it means you have the upper hand in the situation. You believe that somehow they are beneath you. That's why you can pick on them or joke them. You use them as the butt of your joke. You have an advantage.
It's like a rare circumstance. You know what I mean? Like, it's not even like it just happens, like, so sporadically, like, to where you can just laugh about it and just say, oh, that's not, like, a sign or a symptom that this is a systemic problem. You know what I mean? This is, like, the fallback joke of a lot of, you know, black comedians. You know what I mean? Is to fall back on, let me just, you know, try to imitate, you know, the most feminine type of gay man that I can find, or, you know, the stereotypical angry black woman. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it affects the way that black men deal with black women. I mean, you know, black men will act like, you know, the black women that they're dealing with are just, you know, just simply angry about nothing, you know, without really, you know, and label them, you know, in an attempt to silence them and to just dismiss whatever they say without critically evaluating why that person is angry. You know
right.
what I mean?
Exactly. And it goes back to that point that I made when I was reading off that checklist, talking about the attitude. And, you know, I'm looking for it again so I can, read it to you again, you know. And it says attitudes and ideology. And right here it says, I have the privilege to define black women as having an attitude without referencing the range of attitudes that black women have. And I have the privilege of defining black women's attitudes without defining my attitudes as a black man.
Well, here's another one that strikes me. I see this one a lot. Like, there was a posting a while ago on one of these groups on Facebook where it was basically saying, you know, you don't have to frown at me or whatever when I try to speak, you know, say hello to me and smile, you know, I'm trying to make your day better. You know what I mean? Like, well, excuse me, first of all, did I ask you to make my day better? You know what I mean? You
right.
don't know what I'm dealing with. Why do you think that you're entitled to my conversation and to my smile?
I thought you were going to say
friendly gestures just because you're a man who deigns to speak to me.
Right.
You know what I mean? No one is obligated to give you that.
I thought you were going to say, nigga, do I know you?
No, it's not. But see, it's not even about that. Like, some people do take it there, but it's not even about that. It's not about whether the man is attractive. It's not about that. Maybe my feet hurt. Maybe I had a horrible day. Maybe I just had a conversation with somebody that pissed me off, and I don't feel like talking to anybody right now. You know what I mean? Like, maybe I'm just not a friendly person. Maybe that's just not in my personality. But in no circumstance am I obligated to speak to somebody just because they spoke to me. But black men, I find, feel that they're entitled to that because, well, I'm a black man. You know what I mean? And
right.
your life should be about getting one of me. You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
So,
exactly. And, yeah.
Know,
and it becomes about us submitting ourselves and becomes subservient, you know, because
absolutely.
I had that situation, you know, most recently I was in a discussion with, you know, some people and, you know, presenting some ideas and all of them basically were shot down because this black male had already decided what he wanted, and that's it, and that's all. And it didn't matter if my ideas were very good because some of the other ones, you know, were a little excited about it. But he shut it down as his way or no way. And I opt for no way because I can't work with someone that's not willing to compromise and understand where, you know, another person is coming from. But, you know, I definitely wish everybody well, no ill will at all. Nothing but
well,
love.
Not just that, but I mean, we can and we talked about transgender people, but we can also talk about, you know, black lesbians. I mean, there's been a couple of major incidents where black lesbians have been beaten, you know, just because they didn't want to give their phone number to a black man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or they just didn't want to talk to a black man. I'm sorry, you know, no, it's not. She's not a lesbian because she hasn't had the right kind of dick. You know what
right.
I'm saying?
Exactly.
That's not why she's a lesbian. You know, just leave her alone. If she tells you she's not interested, whether she's straight or gay, she's just not interested.
Exactly.
Move on.
Right. No, but isn't like that an individual mean black male and not like all black males? Like this week, everybody's talking about the Steubenville thing over and over again and the rape culture of men. And I'm like, I know a whole bunch of dudes. And out of all the dudes that I've ever met, I would think that, man, there's maybe like three that I would be telling, man, y'all need women, stay away from that cat. He can't help it. That cat will snatch you up. And what I'm saying is, I'm just saying, go ahead.
That's part of the problem, and this is why I'm saying it's part of the problem, because we have in our minds and our culture that the men that perpetrate this type of violence are these, you know, sort of shady, you know, mean, you know, no one would want to be their, you know, their friend. They don't really have a real social network. You know, guys are kind of, you know, stalk in the shadows, you know, for prey. But that's very rarely the case, you know, to have a man like that, you know, get, you know, attack a woman. Now, it happens, but it's very rare. The more common case is your friendly, socially connected, you know, really, you know, quote unquote nice guy. Okay? We have a lot of date rape situations that occur in that way and sort of other things. Like, I'm pretty sure those two guys from Steubenville, if you met them, they probably would be very, very nice young men. But when you get a man when you get men in situations like, you know, where they're drunk and they have an opportunity to take advantage of a girl, we have a society where it says, you know, where we encourage men to take, you know, and to use, you know, force to take those things that they want. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so in that particular a scenario where she is, you know, drunk and not able to necessarily fight them off, they can take advantage of her, and that's exactly what they did. And that happens more frequently than it doesn't. You know what I mean? It's in our minds, though. In our culture, we don't like to talk about those men. But more than likely, most of the rapists that are out there, we know them. We're friends with them. We go to the gym with them. We sit in classes with them. You know what I mean? And we think they're really nice guys. And generally speaking, they may be nice guys. But nice guys, we should realize, are just as capable of doing these sorts of violent things as anybody else.
But to say that makes it sound like if you're a guy who's not rapey and not, you're the rare one. You know what I mean? And that's not true. I mean,
thing as the rapey. That's the thing. The rapey, like what she just said there. It's not always this guy walking around with a trench coat and a ZZ Top beard walking around that's going to be the rapey guy. In this one, an example, it was the clean cut, nice young boys in the town that are doing things right. That's the guy. You got to watch that guy, and that's part of their privilege. How she also said that we don't want to talk about them. That's part of their privilege. Like you not wanting to talk about them is playing into their privilege.
They don't think of themselves as rapists. That's part of the thing. They don't think of themselves as rapists. So when they do something like that, it's accidental or I didn't mean it. And so somehow because they didn't mean it, or they wouldn't have done that, supposedly wouldn't have done that under other circumstances, that somehow makes their rape them less culpable for the rape that they did.
Well, no one said that. No one's saying that.
I'm just saying, what percentage of men, how the society is.
I mean, I'm just trying to, if I was just tuning in and I was trying to guess, like, what percentage of men do you think are rapey, for lack of a better term? And I don't think it's some huge number.
I don't think that you can put it on what percentage of men are rapey. It's a situational type of thing. I'll just put it like this. Okay, you have nice guys and you have good guys, right? So generally speaking, nice guys do things like, you know, trying to store up favors in essence, hoping that eventually a girl will drop their panties. In you know, as a reward. You know what I mean? And a lot of times, mm-hmm. those guys, they get mad at a girl because they've somehow put them in the friend zone, quote unquote. But
right.
It's not that they've been put in the friend zone. They just were not that woman's particular ideal of what she wanted. But a lot of those types of guys, you know, they get into a situation where they can take advantage and they will do something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that happens. And there's situations like that. There's situations that happen in Steubenville where, like, there's not this – we don't have in our culture a good – we don't have any conversations about rape. We don't have any conversations about how people should, you know, seek enthusiastic consent, not just, you know, the drunken head nod that could be anything, you know.
Right.
But enthusiastic consent. You know, to want to have sex with people who want to have sex with you, you know, and why that's a good thing, because women are entitled to pleasure too, you know, and so much of our conversations about sex are so wrapped up in male pleasure and female responsibility. So when a woman is in a situation where she's compromised, it's her responsibility. She was irresponsible for getting herself in that situation, not the man who decided in that situation to take advantage of her or to force himself upon her. That's the problem.
We have to get in our minds
that responsibility is on all of us, that we all have to be responsible for our actions. When we see someone who's drunk and we find them attractive, you know, we just have to walk away because it's a violation to do something with somebody who cannot consent. Period.
All right. No one's defending any of that. I'm just saying that the way the talk has been the last week and a half, It's like people think that 90% of guys are just, you know, seeing a nipple away from snatching somebody's humanity from them. And I don't think that's true.
But we're not talking about all men. You know, it's a select few.
Well, obviously not all men are rapists.
Right.
And obviously there are no to say that when we're talking about rape, of course there are women out there who rape. You know what I mean? There's all types of rapists out there. But generally speaking, the rapes that take place in general society, not necessarily in prisons, because there's a lot of rape going on in prison, but that's for a whole other type of reason. Generally speaking, in society, in everyday society, it is women who are being raped, in general. Okay, and so
right.
When we are talking about this, we have to recognize that it is that we have to talk to all men, and it's not that we're and to everyone. You know, not because all men are rapey. You know, that's not what we're saying. We're saying because we don't know which ones. You know, could find themselves in that situation or would, you know, force themselves on a woman. But we have to talk to all of them.
Can I interject
just
1 second?
Period.
I think we need another term other than rapey. I just want to throw that in there.
I know. I'm just saying because it keeps being used. But, the fact is that we have to talk to everybody and we have to target everybody because there's not one type of rapist.
Yeah, I think something else this rape culture that's been accepted, something that feeds off of is the culture also of making a woman a trophy, like this type of woman with this sort of body and this sort of face and this sort of chastity and it's like and then you got the guys like you said they want to take advantage and they're like maybe I can't get that girl but I can take advantage of this one now and commit that rape. Or like these clean cut guys, part of their privilege, they feel like I'm doing everything right. I'm the clean cut guy. I get the grades. I play the sports. I'm entitled to this woman. I think the rape might feed off of that. The rape culture might feed off of that end of it.
Right. And someone in the chat room, you're right there. Someone in the chat room said we have to be careful with that because acknowledge basically they're saying rape is rape. That there aren't different types of rape. And basically, yeah, rape is rape. And I think what Raina was talking about the different types of men that generally would not be looked at as rapists, if you will.
Right.
You know, like they were talking about the clean-cut guys. Now, you know, one of the things that I've noticed in general, with that particular case in Steubenville, these were star athletes, good students, probably church-going boys. You let their parents tell it. So, therefore, those, would not be the typical stereotype that most people would have as rapists. And, yes, Ted Bundy was attractive. You have John Wayne Gacy. You have, all of what was the name of that guy that was eating people up in,
Jeffrey Dahmer.
Dahmer, he was not an unattractive guy either. And so we have to stop with the stereotypes. And yes, rape is rape. Whether it's somebody you know or someone you don't know, you're violating a woman's rights. You're violating her body, and no means no.
I really don't think that rat face Jeffrey Dahmer was cute. He was a rat face little eating mother. Come on. Come on. And the one thing that they were talking about that case is he was eating folks right around the corner from Marquette University, and he never told people that.
Right. Exactly. I mean, he's not my type, but, everybody needs somebody to love. So somebody found him attractive.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know.
But
he was raping dudes.
Yeah.
But the other point is in terms of figuring out what percentage of men raped. I mean that's a hard thing to put an actual number on, since the actual number of cases that get reported is small. And then even with what we were talking about earlier with the rape kits, there are tens of thousands, if not more, rape kits that are not being processed. And so those men will never be prosecuted.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
What about in the military? Where the military,
well,
where
yeah,
it's
and of course,
superior a superior officer.
In the military. Yeah.
Lots. Like they said, like 5% actually of the rapists actually even see any like court, you know, or get prosecuted. I'm like 5%.
Right.
How can it be
right.
so low?
Yeah.
But it's the same thing in college football. There are a whole bunch of rapes that never get seen light of day and get swept under the rug by the dean of students or whoever is the football players' handlers. You know what I mean? That's to me, what you could bring that up into the Steubenville and then kind of juxtapose that with Sandusky and then the Catholic priest. Because we were saying on the show that if you're Catholic, you can't be mad at the boys in Steubenville because they could have just moved them to another school and they should have been okay with you.
Right. Oh, that's funny, but. Yeah, I see where you're coming from. The whole thing is, you know, and again, you know, even with, you know, some Christians, you know, how are you going to get mad at the, you know, the young, you know, Christian boys when God has forgiven them? They've been washed by the blood. I mean, but at the end of the day, none of that is reality. The reality of the situation is we have law and they broke them, you know. And so, you know, and they're in jail.
Gotta go.
Exactly. So, but, you know, again, let's bring it back to center, you know, getting back to, you know, this male privilege thing. And that was a great example there. Whereas, you know, with that particular story coming out of Steubenville, the coach told the boys that he was going to make it go away. Even during the trial, he told those boys he was going to make it go away. And, you know, I just, you know, that coach needs to be charged as well because he was complicit.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people look more at, you know, this, you know, like it's a hassle. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I'm saying? Why does she, you know, why is she ruining these guys' lives and stuff like that? Now, I've seen similar instances happen before and everything. You know, sexual harassment cases in which, you know, the woman is trying to report it, but, you know, if you say something, this will happen, and this happened, and stuff, and end up ruining your career, and you'll have to fight this and stuff, and all that. In the black community, the thing that really bugs me is the idea of what a black man is supposed to be, and what a black woman is supposed to be. And when you deviate from those two lists of what we are supposed to be doing, then there's a problem. A black woman should be ride or die, quote unquote, whatever the fuck that means, for her man. She should be there with her man, defending her man, upholding her man. And a man is supposed to be taking care of the woman because he can't take care of herself. And, you know what I'm saying, he needs to be doing this and doing that and stuff like that. And it's this whole dichotomy. I see these pictures posted showing, you know what I'm saying, the idea of the black man and the black woman, what roles we each should be playing, to the point where people inaccurately post a picture of lions holding each other when lions don't mate for life. So that's
right.
A bad thing. So anyway.
Oh, yeah, no, and I agree with what you're saying there, because I would think that many men would want the level, you know, the playing field leveled, because that will take a lot of pressure off of them. Like what you were just saying about what these quote-unquote expectations were, you know, men have emotions. Men are very emotional. Men should be able to express themselves and emote as well as, you know, if they dare to be different, you know, eccentricities or what have you, they should be able to have that and to do that without, you know, these, you know, set of standards that most people can't adhere to, or, you know, being expected to live up to certain things. You know, on that list that I was reading to you earlier, you know, again, you know, reading a couple of points here, it says, you know, when it comes to sex, if I say no, chances are it will not be mistaken for yes. if I am raped, no one will assume that I should have known better or suggest that my being raped had something to do with how I was dressed. You know, so it's just, you know, and again, you know, also we want to acknowledge that, you know, there are times when men are raped. You know, they're raped by women and they're raped by other men. And, you know, unfortunately, especially if a man is raped by another man, especially if they're incarcerated, you know, there are those numbers are astonishing. But a lot of times it's not reported. And then when it is reported, you know, those guys are made fun of. I mean, I used to love that show Oz. I mean, when they showed that one scene with Adebisi raping the other guy, I was sick to my stomach, even with The Shield. When the drug dealers made the police captain, you know, when he orally raped him, I was just sick to my stomach. And so, again, you know, we have to address these issues. We have to talk about this. Mm-hmm. Because rape is rape, whether it's a male or a female doing it to a male or a female. It's wrong
right.
across the board.
Right.
But, you know, again, it goes back to, now there is no privilege in that for black men. You know, there's shame as far as that's concerned, the stigmas that, you know, are being perpetuated for that. And again, you know, if we were to, you know, further and level the playing field, then hopefully that type of thing would be alleviated. That type of stigma will be alleviated because that's not fair either.
So I think,
go ahead.
And contrary to what, you know, another commenter was saying, you know, being able to talk about this and pull this out into the forefront.
Sure. What time is it right? This show is over at noon.
Okay, then go do your thing. I was just asking a question. I'm not asking you.
Okay. Somebody. I lost what I was saying. Somebody else can go ahead and talk.
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. But, yeah, no, it's just it's interesting. But, yeah, we have laws on the books for a reason, you know, and getting back to, you know, back to the church culture, if you will. The church culture, again, perpetuates a lot of these isms, if you will. And we have to address it. And what's interesting is when I see some of these men and some women transitioning out of religion into free thought, they carry a lot of these isms with them. You know,
we saw that earlier in the chat room. Mm-mm.
Yeah, in the chat room. Yeah, that person has only been out of the church for about a year, almost 2 years. And they still have a lot of the religiosity mindset. And the reason why I understand it and I kind of empathize with it is because it takes time. And if this is part of your culture and this is what you grew up with, this is what you know. And to go in and totally re-educate yourself and to deprogram and reprogram yourself, that takes work, it takes effort. Which is why we put the information out there, which is why I encourage people to read, you know, and even now, you know, even though I've been out of the church for a long time, and I've really been a non-believer since I was 11 or 12, but I went back in an effort, you know, to kind of see, you know, thinking that maybe I had misunderstood when I was a child, you know, I'm still deprogrammed. You know, the other day when it was snowing up here in Chicago and I was driving and I hit some black ice and was doing everything not to run into the car in front of me, you know, two words came out of my mouth, shit and Jesus. Okay, so, you know.
Shit Jesus.
As long as he can turn it to wine.
Yeah, no, when I hit the ice, it was shit. And when I thought I was going to hit that car and I'm hitting my brakes, I'm like, shit, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You're right. It's hard to not say God bless you when somebody sneezes.
Yes.
But from now on, instead of saying God bless you, I'm gonna say shit Jesus.
Oh my
that's
God,
you. Shit Jesus. Every time somebody sneezes, just go, God is a motherfucker.
Oh, God. Be careful where you do that, Travis.
No, I'm a comedian. I get the cuss. I'm not holding back for nobody.
I'm just saying they might swing on you.
I'm 6 foot seven, 300 pounds. It's not happening.
Okay.
No one's no one's hitting me first. Okay, that doesn't happen.
Okay.
Because it's like Richard Pryor said, if somebody gets hurt, I won't be the only one.
There you go.
All right. Well, there you go.
You think that might be blackmail privilege?
Yes, that we're just seen as
these tough guys.
No, that's big nigga privilege right there. That's
okay.
What that is. Okay.
Wow.
There's a difference.
Right.
There's a difference.
Okay, wow.
There's a difference. If the biggest cat in the room is not mean and not being a bully, then other people don't get to be a bully in the room. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay? If the biggest cat in the room is not bullying folks, then other people, somebody else can't bully people in the room. I'm not a bully. I'm a bully slayer, but I slay them with words. So,
okay.
Yeah, I could probably whoop somebody's ass, but I'm going to make fun of you instead and give you a new nickname that's going to hurt your feelings a little bit longer.
Well, there you go.
There you go. But, it's just, it's been interesting, looking at all of this, and I'm going to post the links to it on my wall either after the show or when I make it back from my meeting this afternoon. But, this is worth, looking into. It's worth all of us examining ourselves. It's worth all of us trying to pursue some type of solution that benefits everyone. But, again, it starts with a discussion, not with attitudes or arguments, if you will, that this does not exist. Yes, it does exist. To white people, racism doesn't exist. To students, let me make sure I clarify that. To some white people, racism doesn't exist. To some, men, sexism doesn't exist. To, some black men, black male privilege doesn't exist. To some black women, privilege doesn't exist, because there are some that argue that black women have a certain type of privilege as well. And we'll talk about that one day in the future also, that can be argued. But, I'll be posting the information regarding this, a talk that, that I found on YouTube that I think you all will enjoy, is Dr. Lewis talking at the Founders Day Symposium at Morehouse. I think you guys will enjoy that as well. But, again, this is not meant to demean anyone. This is not meant to anger or offend anyone. We just want to open up the dialogue, open up the chat so that we can discuss.
Yeah, and if you're angry and offended, think about why you're angry and offended. Is it because of what we're just talking about? Or is it because maybe you have some things you need to, examine within yourself?
Maybe you're angry because you have a privilege that you don't want to give up. So,
The
reason why a lot of the people didn't want universal health care is because they don't want to wait in line with niggas and Latinos and women, for that matter. They don't want to wait in line with anybody poorer than them. What? You mean I can't just give them a couple of dollars and I can skip these fools? That's what they want to do.
Yeah.
It's the same reason why the black preachers, they don't want the women claiming any power in the church. So they'll hopscotch around a whole bunch of different
things.
Sorry
about that. I'm going to mute my phone. My dog's barking.
No problem.
If
that's what you want to call it, I was barking, sure.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? But seriously. There are a lot of people who, when it is their privilege, which is being asked to scale back your greed, scale back your privilege, then they say, well, I don't have privilege. There's nothing wrong with what I do. I deserve all of this. I am superior to y'all.
Right. Absolutely. Which is probably why, in part, those women that we were listening to, Kim, got such a backlash when they tried to talk about, sexuality and feminism and, black women in the black church. You know what I mean? Because, there's you know, even though they emphasize, you know, sexual purity in churches in general, it is usually, you know, further emphasized for women, you know, in a way that it isn't for men, you know. And there's this idea that women are to be found and that men are to find them. You know, a man who is, you know, a man who is found that the wife has found it's a good thing. You know, the ruby analogy, you
mm-hmm.
know, all of those other types of things.
Exactly.
You know, those things are always propped up, but there's never usually a discussion about how, you know, sexual purity is something that all of them are supposed to strive for. You know what I mean? It's mainly on the woman, you know?
Exactly. Exactly, exactly. And, you know, again, these conversations, again, we're challenging you to think and live for yourself, you know, not convert you or anything, but we want you to talk about these issues. We want you to call in. We want you to inbox us. You know, we welcome all of that, you know, and it's just we like different perspectives. Even if we don't agree with you or what have you, because, you know, we're not a monolith here either. We have disagreements all the time. You should hear some of these conversations on the back end. But, you know, again, when we're trying to work toward the greater good in general, but, you know, we're not trying to get everybody locked stuff together. Just present some ideas. Try to work towards them with, you know, towards a solution. Work with each other. And, again, this will benefit all people, not just a select group of people, and to, you know, the religious women, in particular Black church women, that are starting to express their thoughts. Because many of them do think for themselves. They've just yeah. been, you know, silenced and muted to a degree, and they're starting to speak out even more. Because I know for a fact that, you know, some of these, you know, women in church, you know, see things the way that we do. They've just been too afraid to speak up. And to see these guys and these women, you know, both male and female, speaking up now, you know, standing up on the courage of their convictions is refreshing. Now, while I may not agree with the particular ideology, you know, of the Bible or what have you, of Christianity, the fact that they're speaking up for themselves, that's a step in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. We'll get to talking with them about the rest of that later.
Exactly.
You know? But, you know, it's a good first step. You know, we can accept that. We can accept that you're going to call out the pastor and all the rest of those people when you see hypocrisy going on. Because I remember this when I was in church. Like, you would know who kind of was sleeping together. And it was funny to me because you would know, like, a deacon and, you know, some other woman in the church were sleeping together. And there was always, like, some shade thrown at the woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But, like,
right.
not so much shade thrown at the man. It's like, well, you know, men are weak. You know, this woman, you know, she probably seduced him and all this other type of stuff. She, you know, and he probably got to a point where he just couldn't say no. Well, wait a second. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know what I mean? What if he seduced her? What if it was the other way around? You know what I mean? Maybe he's using his power and his position and his mm-hmm. privilege to get these women and not the other way around. You know
exactly.
what I mean?
Exactly. An example of that was, I forget the pastor's name and where this was located, but this was a Black pastor that went to trial and went to jail because his mistress, not his wife, but his mistress, he stabbed her over 20 times and said that, you know, the reason why he stabbed her was, this man was 61, you know, when this, most recently, so he's 61 now. And basically he said that, you know, basically he's trying to say it was a crime of passion and that the woman had toyed with his feelings and he was using all kinds of scriptures. And he served as his own attorney as well. And the whole thing was a mess. But when they looked into his background, 30 years prior, his other wife, and I think he was on his third wife at the time, but his first or second wife, he had stabbed her as well. He had two children with that woman. So he had a history of that as well as other, you know, issues along the way. But yet it was always the woman's fault. you know, sitting there reading his, you know, deposition and, you know, just reading it. And I'm like, this is amazing. But it was always the woman's fault. And, again, you know, even when you look at some languages, when you learn some foreign languages, in particular the Romantics, everything that's bad is associated with female.
Mm-hmm. You know? Right. That is true. That is true. All of them are that way.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But that exactly. shows lazy thinking, right? That shows lazy thinking, right? Ingersoll said that the man that believes that men are superior to women cannot use himself as an example. Robert Greene Ingersoll. Okay, it's 1830s, right? So had it figured out, and everybody's trying to pretend like it ain't true. They try to pretend like people aren't, you know, it's the men-women thing, right? But it's also, I think you're right, one thing Rain was saying, you know how like people like men will like belittle women with like little small phrases? In a
right.
similar way that on TV you see them belittle black in a generic kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
Like Bill Cosby was asked why he never was on Saturday Night Live. And his answer was, because they want to take my color and make it the punchline, and I don't want to do that.
Exactly. 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 I think we have Nicole on the line with us right now. But
hey, Tommy.
Good morning, or afternoon for some of you.
Yeah, you know, and yeah, so, you know, we've been talking about this black male privilege, but I understand exactly where Bill Cosby was coming from, because, you know, there comes a time when you have to stand up. You have to find or grow a backbone and stand up and say, no, I will not be the punchline, you know, to your joke. No, I will not allow you to parade me around so that you can say that, you know, this is what a woman should look like. And as a matter of fact, there was a church in which the pastor had this one young lady parade down the aisle, and he was describing her. It was like a fashion show. And he made her turn around and told the young men in the church that if they wanted to get a piece of that, they had to get saved. Yeah.
So you, well, they'll use
anything. That kind of reminds me of that scene. That scene from Coming to America.
Coming to America. Oh my goodness.
Yeah,
just,
where he was like, where he was telling the woman to turn around, and he was like, God can only make that the Hugh Hefner on high. You know, he was like, Hugh Hefner can take the picture, but only God can make something like that. You know, it's something crazy like that. Yeah.
Like Joshua in the Battle of Jericho. Like Daniel in the Lion's Den. Like Gilligan on the island. Only God can make it like that. Yeah. We're here with Mr. Randy Watson. She's your queen. Hey, the other day...
And
I was
then notice he didn't say
cool.
exactly where God was. He just said that there was a God somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Right.
A God hey. Somewhere.
Oh. Travis is cool. Anyway.
Pound for pound, Sugar Ray Robinson is the best fighter ever lived. He beat your
Okay.
But the coldest line... The code is why that whole thing, it actually makes your point in the movie. It's way early in the movie, and James Earl Jones says to Eddie Murphy in a private moment between them two, he says, do you have sex with your bathers? I do.
Right.
Right? I mean, you know, later on it's my son works, you know, but early on in the movie, before he comes to America, James Earl Jones says to him, I've always wondered, do you have sex with your bathers? I do. That shows you the women's place.
Yeah.
Cold line.
Well, I mean, even before that, I mean, you know what it is. Like when he has her hopping up and down, you know what I mean, on one foot, you know, barking and stuff. You know, you knew what it was. But
that was hilarious. Hilarious. You know, another thing that, you know, trips me out, like, you watch a lot of these Tyler Perry movies and shit like that, and you see the archetypes and who is playing what role, and the woman is 9 times out of 10 there's this really naive as hell black woman, and it's super, super evil, almost Bond level in the hood type evil black guy. And he's pretty much just walking all over her and just pissing all over her. And it's her who has the character arc of finding another man, but this guy is the pretty much Clark Kent of men and stuff. And they eat it up, man. They eat it up. You know, I don't know how it is outside of the black community, but I know, especially in the black community, they eat it up. They love that sexism kind of thing going on, man. Because, you know, they really do believe, especially because of the Bible, they really do believe that, you know, that's your goal in life. A woman is supposed to find this really good-looking, preferably light-skinned dude. I'm joking about that because that's how it happened in the movie.
Yeah. Anyway. Right. That has a lot of money, and that can support her, and, you know, they're a house full of children. And
he's a brother. You know, but he's not really a brother.
Right.
You know
right.
what I'm saying? He could be other.
How about that? Mm. But, hey, guys, you know, this conversation was great. This is the first of many. Definitely the first of many. And, you know, we're definitely going to be talking about it more and more and bringing this to the forefront because, you know, I collected so much information and so much of things that I want to share with you. I'm going to share some things today. I'll probably do it after my meeting, so it won't be shared until about 6 o'clock this evening. But, guys, thank you so much. I'd like to thank all of you guys that listened in, that called in, that participated on the phone and in the chat room. Again, I appreciate
some
each and every last one.
Some are more appreciated than others.
But now, even the ones with the opposing viewpoint, you know, I appreciate it because, you know, it kind of gives me an idea as to the
it's
mind.
It's not the viewpoint we had a problem with, though,
Kim. Exactly, yeah. It's not the viewpoint that I have a problem with. It's the presentation that I had an issue with, you know, how you were presenting your point extremely antagonistic, but, you know, I do appreciate your point, and I wish you the very best. So next week, next Sunday, we'll be talking about masculinity and homophobia. Tuesday, we'll be talking about unauthorized authority. Friday, that's still to be determined, but I will let you guys know about that as soon as possible. A couple of guests, later on this month, one will be Sativo. She'll be on talking about her book, Godless Americana. Please go out and pick that book up. It's a good, good book. Check it out. You'll enjoy it. And because I've gotten through the first couple of chapters, and it's phenomenal. And let's see here. I think we're going to have GU on here this month as well. Still working out the details for that as well. So just kind of let you guys know we have some fun guests coming up. And I am looking forward to talking with you all again. And until then, you all take care, and we'll be talking again soon. Good night.
Black free thinkers, where we walk by sight with a bright flashlight to illuminate night. Free thought, we don't walk by faith in the lost mind state because it's not quite safe. We don't recruit, we're not peers from a church, so don't be spooked, we're not here to convert. The only truth that's not pulled from a text, show me proof that's not good after death. This is the challenge to think for yourself, bring it out of the bottle and speak what you felt. 310-982-4273 to get through, a venue for community, and this is the zone. If you'd like to speak with Tim, then pick up the phone. 310-982-4273 to get through. The next tree branch is Rainer, and it's best you listen to reason, science, and skepticism. It's loaded with straight facts, inspiring and dope. She can make Bill Nye repeat. tie in his lab coat. Humans are hilarious, and every other Friday I'd like to hear commentary on culture, people. So I hit up Super Mario and bring in Emmeline to discuss why we're capable of ultra evil. It's normal for my brain to have a two-way street, but if there's collisions, well then you got to just mention it. And don't be afraid of where the truth may lead, ignoring your position of cognitive dissonance. When Father Teresa preaches, it's hard to stop. So Kim paired me up with Alfred in the barbershop. I have extended family and all these places now, as the free thought tree pollinates around. Yeah. This is the challenge to think for yourself. Break it out of the bottle and speak what you felt. 310-982-4273 to get through. A venue for community, and this is the zone. If you'd like to speak with Kim, then pick up the phone. 310-982-4273 to get through. Black prefix, where we walk by sight with a bright flashlight to illuminate night. We don't walk by faith in a lost mind state, 'cause it's not quite safe.